Mamaree Stevens is a legal academic and is best known, I guess, for her work creating Papakupu Reo Ture, a dictionary of Māori legal terms. She's a wonderful thinker when it comes to law and Ngāi Māori, and it's always wonderful to get her perspectives. So I thank you, Mamaree, for being a guest on our program. Once again, it's te tohine tēnā koe.
Oh, tēnā wāti koe. He pai o kupu ngare kari tika i tēnei wā.
Kia ora rā wāti koe. Good to catch up with you, Mamaree. Mamaree is the most talented of the fabulous Stevens family.
kei te tika tērā.
Yeah. Come on, I was speaking with Dale yesterday. And Tainui a little while back, but it's good to have a kōrero with you. Look, part of this is to do with he potama and the study paper and where tikanga intersects with our legal system, how it's being used, and some of the terminology that's perhaps clouding the discussions at times, Mamaree. Firstly, would you sort of succinctly describe what the study paper he potama is about for our listeners?
Well, he potama comes a couple of decades after a very influential paper on Māori law penned by Tā Iti Jury. And so this study paper almost kind of takes that as a starting point and incorporates everything that we've learned and been doing in the subsequent nearly 30 years, actually 30 years. I think that paper came out last couple of decades. So there's a whakapapa to this work. It's so timely because there's so much going on right now. There's so many cases that have been happening that are kind of articulating or investigating the role of tikanga Māori, both as a source of law in its own right, tikanga Māori being recognised by the common law, so where it fits in the general legal system, and what the interaction is like between these two legal worldviews and legal systems. So this paper, it's quite a tome. it's not exactly bedtime reading, but there's some fantastic kind of information in there that's delivered in a structure that makes sense. So one thing I particularly like about he potama is that it gives you some guidance for those of us who are working in the law or teaching law, gives us some guidance on how to think about case studies. How does this work in the real world? What is the kind of method that we could work up that we could actually incorporate these tikanga thinking? And it gives us a framework and some guidance on how to do that. And that's actually really great, because if you Google the word tikanga and try and make your way through the morass of information, if you're new to this or not experienced with it, you will be incredibly confused. So something like he potama, for those of us who are working, I think anyone can read it and anyone can dip into it, but for those of us in the legal profession and in the legal world, if you like, it's incredibly useful.
Well, tēnā koe. I guess a lot of our whānau Māori harbour hope that at some stage we'll have an interweaving of our sophisticated political, legal, social practices into New Zealand society. At the moment, pretty much guided by Westminster-styled systems. And we're noting that some judges in our court system are acknowledging tikanga, and others seem to be a little perplexed as to how they might interweave tikanga into their decision-making. We've got considerations about the principles of the treaty, the many different references we have in legislation. Yeah. So it's sort of murky water here at the moment. Is there a way through to find more clarity to position tikanga as a tool to make our legal system better going forward?
Well, some of that is in legal education. So, and that's something that's happening, kicking off on the 1st of January next year, is tikanga Māori being a compulsory element of legal education. Because, you know, you're quite right, for some judges and some practitioners, and many actually, who haven't grown up with an understanding of what tikanga is or how it applies as a way of regulating behaviour, It's going to be a period of transition, really quite difficult in some cases. So some of that is about legal education. What we've also got to take is a long-term view. So tikanga hasn't ever gone away. It's always been there. It's always operated as a legal system anyway, but not all of us have felt bound by it. Many of us have, but we have experienced a lot of disenfranchisement and separation over the decades, over the last couple of centuries. So actually, we don't want this to be, in my opinion, we do want to take it slow. This is the beginning of something great, but we've got to be careful. We don't want spurious tikanga arguments being raised just for the sake of it. We actually want tikanga to be developing in that kind of public sphere. Waihoki te marae, tērā taha. So tikanga will develop in its own way, in its own time, in its own peoples. But in terms of this kind of public sphere where tikanga is increasingly being seen as something relevant to all New Zealanders, we've got to take this slowly. So the slowness of the court system, for example, case-by-case development is actually not a bad thing. We've got had a very influential case that came out last year, the GF and Comptroller of Customs case, which was an employment law case, which had a couple of very strong statements about the relevance of tikanga to the employment relationship, right? So, tikanga, just the reason I raise that is that at its heart, those of us who know something about tikanga Māori understand that it's relational, right? There's a deep relational basis to tikanga Māori, and if there is no relational basis, it's hard to see how tikanga can kind of be woven in or applied if it's just done in an abstract kind of way. But in an employment law case, we've got the employment relationship between the employer and the employee. In that case, involved a public service employee, where the policy documents talked about kaitiakitanga, manaakitanga, things like that. Well, what does it mean if you've got these policy documents for an employer talking about tikanga Māori values? Well, then, yeah, naturally, those things are going to become subject to the scrutiny of So that's what that case was about. Was the employer bound to take account of those values? Yeah, actually, they were. So that was a big decision. But that's one case. What happened? There's a few other employment cases that are coming through, and we're starting to take a notice of that and teaching about that in the universities. So that's an example where these things develop case by case, but there's got to be some kind of understanding that tikanga Māori is its own system and its own kind of relational basis. So you can't just apply it willy-nilly to get people off stuff, It's got to be some integrity, and that's going to take time to work out what integrity looks like.
This issue has been highlighted by the situation at Manurewa, which we won't need to delve into completely.
Oh, that's a fascinating one.
You mentioned the relational aspect here between, say, the work of a marae. And at this situation, we were looking at establishing a relationship so there was some trust that it occurred so that people would get the COVID vaccination, which morphed into seeking out more information regarding the census. And the manaakitanga that we take for granted on the marae can, from a Western legal outpoint or perspective, be seen as providing inducements when it came to the voting process. But that was never the intention. Establishing a relationship as part of tikanga Māori, and is that now coming into question here, just as an observation about Manurewa?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to talk specifically about Manurewa, but Section 217 of the Electoral Act is where this offence, known as the offence of treating, is set out. And it's really interesting because if you read that provision, and of course everyone's now going to go and read Section 217 of the Electoral Act, you'll see that it's actually quite culturally defined. So there's an exception in that provision. So that the idea of treating is that you turn up to somewhere and you're given an inducement by way of the specific, by way of food or alcohol and other things, to vote in a certain way, right? So that it's quite a high standard. So this was never, in the Manurewa Marae case, it was never referred to the police, because the standard there is corrupt intention. Just too high to be able to demonstrate. So that's not, you know, there's no kind of legal issue really now that arises out of that. But in that provision, it has an exception. If people put on a feed, I'm paraphrasing, if people put on a feed after the voting happens, a light supper, I think, was the word that was used. Now, that's very culturally bound language. You can kind of, you know, that's a very kind of part of our cultural matrix at work there, the idea of a light supper. So, you know, culture matters when it comes to things like this. And I think, yeah, we have to be mindful that manaakitanga is what's at stake here. And the whole point of the manaakitanga, as far as I understand it, in that exercise, was to get people to vote. And I, you know, having been voting at our local marae, Hauewhao Paparārangi, down here in Newlands, you know, that's part of it, is you make the environment warm and welcoming, and you want to establish relationship with these people so they come back and they're part of the marae life, and they in turn, because it's reciprocal, they in turn want to respond by participating. Now, there may be a point at which we have to say, well, participating in entering into relationship does not include voting for the candidate and sticking a leaflet in the manaakitanga pack to vote for a particular party. You know, there is some common sense that has to apply. But, yeah, it's that intersection between cultural norms, I think, really, we need to be looking at that kind of stuff. It's a very interesting provision there, and probably some attention should be paid to those moments of cultural collision. I think, you know, we want to get our people out and voting. We want to get our people participating. We want to get our people being hired in jobs that where values like manaakitanga are touted. But there are legal kind of moments of collision between those worldviews, and we have to kind of navigate those things and be purposeful about that.
Good talking with you. Thanks for your thoughts on the law, LAW, and the LORE, which guides a lot of what we do as a people. Marmalee Stevens joining us for a brief discussion on some of the issues regarding tikanga within the legal framework. Thanks so much, Marmalee.
Awesome. Kia ora. Hei te wā.
You're 603.